Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Last Monday during the adult slot, one of the questions we had was from a young fella who was going out with a woman who was 20 years older than him. And I don't know, he had concerns that I think we basically dismissed out of hand. So because of that, today's hashtag on Twitter is Cougar Movies. It's already the top trend in Ireland, the gran with the golden bum. Jean and Esther, join us once again, though, for Movies and the Booze. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello. That was a nice segue there.
So what are we going to be talking about today?
Organic wines from Spain. I was there at the beginning of September at an organic wine fair in Pamplona in the Navarra region. And we've got a sherry style from Montilla's Moreles, and we have a natural wine. Everybody's looking for no sulphur. I have a no sulphur wine for you today.
Right, okay. What's a sherry style mean as opposed to sherry?
Basically, they use the Solera system, the blending system, to make the wine, but they don't fortify it the same. In the Jerez region, on the DO rules, the wine is fortified. In Montilla Moreles, it's not fortified, but they use a Solera, which is a fractional blending system.
Oh, well, that makes it much more fair.
I
understood the orgasm woman more than I understood that. What does fortifying it mean, actually?
They stop the fermentation by adding spirit.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that kind of bumps up the alcohol content.
ABV in this one is a maximum of 15%, whereas in a sherry, it's about 17%.
Right, okay, right. So we've an Irish film and a Hollywood film today, Esther.
Yes.
And is it from the posters, is it Will Smith kind of acting with himself?
Yeah, there's two Will Smiths, as if one wasn't dialed up enough
for you. Okay.
There's a lot of film technology going on in this one, and it's Ang Lee, the great Asian filmmaker, who is both de-aging Will Smith as part of the plot line of the film, which we'll go into later.
Yeah.
But he's also, in his last few movies, he's been kind of pushing the boat out in terms of digital technology and particularly 3D technology. So what we're getting here is a film at a really high frame rate per second, and we'll go into all that again later on as well. It's technical.
Save us tonight. The two of you are going to bamboozle us with science today.
It's about, say, three times. It's 120 frames per second you're seeing this film in, which sharpens the 3D, is the only positive thing I can say about it, because it's one of the ugliest things I've ever seen on a big screen. And I don't know why they're going this route with technology. It's like, I felt a bit carsick coming out of it.
It's just too vivid, you mean?
It has the effect of making something both hyper-realistic looking and utterly fake looking. And it messes with your depth of field and all of that stuff.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it's kind of fascinating to watch. And it is kind of the very latest and kind of groundbreaking technology. We've been going this way for a while with high definition, even on TV, watching your football matches at home and stuff. So it's been gradually going this way, but this is just really too extreme. And besides that, it's a really bad film as well in terms of storytelling.
No. Gemini Man, is it a remake? Was it made before?
I don't think so, but it is very derivative of other films. Like, it's very...
Right, okay.
It feels like...
I don't know, I had a feeling there was a film that had Charlton Heston in it.
There was a film called Gemini Man years ago. Back in the dark days of the 70s, Esther.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think that was in high definition, though.
No. The premise here is Smith is a hired assassin in his 50s who wants to retire, and he is confronted with a younger cloned version of himself. So, you know, pretty much every action film you've ever seen, really.
Right, okay.
What they've done, and it is kind of fascinating, is there is, you know, 51-year-old contemporary Will Smith, and there's a Will Smith in his 20s. And they're kind of facing off against each other. So I can see the premise here for really good bones of an idea, but it just doesn't work.
Okay. It's kind of face off.
Really, it's face off.
In a way.
Yeah.
And the other one, the Irish movie, is about pregnancy.
Yeah, this is lovely.
But
it's so lovely. Yeah, it's what a pleasant surprise, I suppose. On the back of the success of Derry Girls, to see these Derry Girls working some more magic, that's Brona Gallagher and her sister Louise who produced this film.
And
it's ostensibly a kind of a comedy about a woman in her early mid-40s who comes pregnant following a one-night stand, but it actually turns into something much more charming and meaningful, because she has a teenage daughter who's played by Lola Pettigrew, who is mortified, basically, that her mother
is pregnant.
Mammy's pregnant at the age of 44. And what is she going to do? And she's got her own stuff going on at school with her peers. So it's as much, it's kind of a pregnancy comedy, and but it's also about the relationship between these two women at very different stages of their lives, because the daughter is the grown up in the relationship, and Brona Gallagher's character is the kind of feckless, devil-may-care older woman. So it's really, really good. Really pleasant surprise, this one. And broke a lot of new ground in terms of, you know, it was made by Screen Northern Ireland primarily, using a team of mostly female creatives, but also people who hadn't made features before. So a lot of fresh new talent coming in here, which was mentored and supported and funded and properly. And here's the lovely result of it. It's a really, really good movie.
And where it's set in the north, is it?
It's set in Derry.
In Derry.
Derry is a character in the film, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's that sounds very good. Gemini Man was a TV series in 1976.
So it's TV, so I knew it was the 70s,
So yeah, and no, you, we were kind of all right and all wrong. You know what I mean? There was Gemini Man was a TV series. Charlton Heston was in a film called Omega Man, which coincidentally has already been remade as I Am Legend, which also starred Will Smith.
So that's there you good go. So
that,
right there.
That's a good fact. So that kind of brings it all kind of full circle.
Yeah.
Really. Will Smith hasn't been in anything in a while, has he? Or was it just that my... he's been in Aladdin. Yeah.
Oh, God. That was not a good movie.
Yeah.
And it was a lot
He's
of
having
Will
a
Smith
bad run of it then.
He's having a bad run of it because he used to be... There used to be this thing about Will Smith, be a joke in the early noughties, that it was like, put Will Smith in an action film, release it on the 4th of July and you're guaranteed 2 million box office. It was even called the Will Smith effect for a while. So he was considered as recently as 8-10 years ago as an absolute banker, a Tom Cruise, if you like, at the box office, that he would guarantee he'd open a film big. It's just, I can understand why an actor like him would want to be on board with something like this. I mean, it is experimental. You are pushing the boat out in terms of film technology. But I would also say I'd be a bit worried for the future of film if this became the norm, because it's just, it's not good looking at all, you know.
Isn't that interesting? Is it one of those things you'd need to see on an enormous screen without your eyeballs bleed?
I did. I saw it in the Odeon in The Point yesterday in iSense, which is their biggest screen, one of the biggest screens in the country.
Right, okay.
It was just, there was just too much information coming from every shot to my eyeballs. And that also has the effect then, you know, it's not a good film anyway, but it has the effect of taking you out of a film. So any chance you have of getting lost in something is problematic, you know. There is one really good action scene, though, where somebody tries to kill somebody with a motorbike, and it's really good.
Okay.
And you actually see the bones of maybe the potential of it. For action movie making, maybe that it's, you know, that makes it all more immediate and impactful. But other than that, no.
Yeah. Gemini Man has the main character, Sam Casey, where he could go invisible for 3 minutes with a beep of his digital watch.
Ben Johnson, I think, played
that.
Yes, it was Ben Johnson.
It's all coming back now.
I
remember my name and everything. It's great.
Alias Smith and Jones, which I also love.
I forgot. We'll reminisce about what it was like when dinosaurs roamed the earth during this commercial break. Jane Smullen and Esther McCarthy are with us for Movies and Booze. A few comments from some of the listeners. Esther did reference Gemini Man, which has made this really high frame rate, so it's kind of super, super high definition. The Hobbit was filmed the same way. Gemini Man is and looked awful too, says another texter. Owen says, Hollywood needs to go back to making more movies like Joker, which had a modest budget but stays with you for days. What an incredible performance by Joaquin Phoenix, and they capture that period in New York so well, says Owen. I suppose whatever one's feelings are about the Joker, he makes an excellent point.
It's certainly a good looking film. You can't deny that. I wasn't as in love with it as some critics. But it's been interesting. I've been talking to a lot of people about it this week. I think it's dividing people a little, actually, as I would have expected it to.
Yeah. Though, I mean, as Owen said, it stays with you. And that could be,
absolutely,
it stays with you because you're thinking about how I felt about it, or why did I hate it so much, or why did I like it so much?
It's definitely a really visceral film experience, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that's, you know, I suppose that's what you want films to do. Could you ask the wine expert about a bottle of wine I bought in Kassara Winery in Lebanon this week? It's Le Souverain 2004. Should I bring it home or drink it now? Says Dr. Bob, who's currently in Lebanon.
Who's in Lebanon. Kassara is a very, very good producer. One of the best, in fact. I don't know very much about the vintages. I don't think there's a huge amount of vintage variation in Lebanon. But 2014 is 5 years old and it'll be...
No, 2004.
Oh, 2004. Sorry, I thought you said 2014. Yeah. That's hard to know. That's 15 years?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Look, I remember years ago, talk about a senior moment. I don't know what it is. Chateau Muzar.
Yeah.
The very famous vintage was the 82. And I think in about 95, somebody who'd been in the Lebanon brought us a bottle back and we tried it and it was stunning. So I think you'd still be pretty okay about for trying it. It should be all right.
Yeah.
You know, the Kassara is a good producer and those mines have got longevity. So yeah, it should be okay.
Should he bring it home, do you think, for a special occasion or just have it there or buy five more bottles of it?
Bring it home. The only thing is put it in your suitcase if it breaks.
Yeah, that's true. You don't want to risk that, doctor.
Yeah, drink it while you're there.
Yeah. I'm vegan and I see on the label on my wine, the bottle says may contain egg. I'm dumbfounded at this. Why on earth is there feckin' egg in my wine? Has this ever been the way? Because I've been vegan for about 6 years now and never noticed this before. I honestly feel ill, says Sandra, who probably, bad news, Sandra, probably any alcohol.
They use egg white to filter, but only in really premium wines. There's lots of
right,
other.
Right, okay.
Egg white is mainly just used in premium wines. Usually they use gelatin, which is a byproduct of beef.
Bones.
So
yeah.
Unfortunately, that's also used. Your best bet, it will specify if the wine is vegan. And in fact, the second wine we have, Le Naturel, that we're having today, is a vegan wine. Vegan wine is very much of the moment and it's always specified on it. So in future, when you're buying it, just have a look at the back label or ask when you're buying and say that you're vegan and you only want a vegan wine.
Yeah, because I think an awful lot of spirits, there's similar things there. It's used, you know, there's animal products used to filter it, etc. Hi, wine guru. I have a wine that comes up on the app Vivino, valued at over €1,000. It's Clos de Vougeot Grand Cru Domaine Pierre Panel. Is it really worth that much and what the hell can I do with it? I hate wine. You hate yourself. Ooh. That's your problem.
See, it's all down to storage and how you've been storing it. And has it been stored on its side at an ambient temperature of 8 degrees and, you know, nurtured and fed and looked after and waved at for about the last length of time you've had it? You won't be able to get anything for it. But Clos de Vougeot is absolutely. See if somebody who loves wine will do a swapsie with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Like for a car.
Yeah, or something. I mean, that is worth a lot of money, that wine. And yeah, you might be able to swap it with somebody. I've no idea.
Billy says, I went to see The Joker with my 18-year-old son during the week. When it was over, I said to him, well, what did you think of it? He said the reason people left the cinema was not due to the disturbing scenes. They left it because it was shite. Have to agree. Watchable, not great. Think we fell for the hype. Your man Joaquin was great though, says Billy. There you go.
Yep.
Lots of people texting in to say that Ben Murphy was in. Not a Ben Johnson. I think one of us maybe said Ben Johnson by accident. When I was in college, I had a running joke with my friend where we drank wine out of the most ridiculous things we could. Bowls, trophies, Easter eggs, etc. She's getting married now. And as a nod to that, I want to get her some really lovely wine glasses as a gift. I know she prefers red. How can I tell the difference in the glasses? What do you look for in a wine glass, Siobhan?
Well, the reader are probably the most commercial and they're quite expensive, so if you're looking to buy a very, very acceptable a wedding present, then certainly that is worth having a look at. They have glasses for Pinot Noir, they have glasses for Cabernet Sauvignon. If you know what sort of, she likes to drink Bordeaux, you could look at investing in 6 Cabernet glasses, or if she likes to drink Burgundy, you could look at investing in 6 Burgundy glasses. It's the shape of the glass, which is made specifically it's all engineered so that the shape of the glass throws the wine into your mouth at a specific angle, which enhances the flavour of the wine. I've been to tastings given by the Riedel family, and I can tell you it works. Mitchell and Sons, who are in IFSC and Avoca in Kilmechanic and in Glasthule, are the agents for Riedel glasses. So if you look on their website or go into the shop, they'll be able to give you an idea of, you know, what range of glasses they have and advise you which ones to buy.
I recently saw wine in a can for sale in a shop and was tempted to try it, but worried it would be of poor quality. Are you also meant to drink it from the can, like a beer, or decant
it? Get used to it. That is the future. In fact, I was just talking about that with some wine colleagues, wine industry colleagues, and we're going to be seeing an awful lot more wine in cans, and it's a very acceptable method of closure. It's handy. In America, it took off like you wouldn't believe this year. I know certain brands such as Barefoot are already in can here. You have a look at your supermarket shelves. They're starting to appear bit by bit. Within 5 years, everybody will be drinking wine out of cans.
My God. I read The Goldfinch and absolutely loved it, even if it took me a while to get through it. I've heard terrible reviews about the film, though, and it's so long. Is it worth going to see, or should I just stick with the book?
It's very long. It's not great. It's 2.5 hours long, and I got on better with it than a lot of reviewers. I saw a lot to it, and some great performances in there. I haven't read the book, so I can't compare, but I think perhaps one of the criticisms of the film is that it's almost too faithful to the book and not maybe cinematic enough in its own right. So take from that what you will. If you want a very faithful adaptation, it might be for you.
Yeah. Gemini Man and the new Martin Scorsese film, The Irishman, have both used some sort of filter to de-age the actors. Yes. Why not just hire younger people to play these characters? Are there no young actors in Hollywood anymore? It's in The Irishman, at least, it's like, you know, De Niro.
Yeah.
You know, it's a young De Niro.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. And I think it makes sense for the story of Gemini Man as well. But of course, there are all sorts of ethical issues as well with, like, de-aging people. Will they have a say in that in the future film? You know, will we see people on screen after they've passed away?
Which has happened. Now, usually it's kind of a bit crap. But if somebody died, I think it happened with Oliver Reed, didn't it? He died halfway through filming, so they had to kind of do a bit of digital editing, which wasn't that convincing, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all knew they were dead. I want to see The Joker last week too. Yes, Joaquin is great and very impressive, but I'm sorry, the movie is crap. There was no storyline. The man has a mental illness, so he becomes a killer. Very poor. And now I hear there's potentially a sequel. Go way out of that, says Deirdre.
This is interesting because I thought I was going to get a lot of criticism for giving it a so-so review, but it sounds like a lot of people agree. Joaquin is great in it. I think you probably will see a sequel. I mean, it's doing really, really strong box office. Like, it's doing even better than they would have hoped for in their highest predictions. So you are probably going to see, and it did feel like an origin story as well. So there's definitely other places you could go with that character, I think.
Peter says, my girlfriend is after getting pregnant. How did it happen, Peter? How did it happen? She loves her wine, but now she can't drink much more than a glass at a go. I know this is a long shot, but I wonder, does Jean know if non-alcohol or low-alcohol wines are available in Ireland? And if so, what should I look out for that might taste something similar to the real thing? Says Peter, has obviously never heard this programme before, because you're asked that every week.
Lots of low-alcohol. Some of them maybe have 0.5%, and they are recommending absolutely no alcohol if you're pregnant at the moment, so you'd be careful of that. But saying that, there's lots of no alcohol wines that taste very good. Naturo comes to mind. It's the one I think is the best. There's Ariel. Blossom Hill has no alcohol. They do them in varietals. Just, they're everywhere. It's the big trend at the moment, so you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Don't panic. She can have no alcohol wine for the next 9 months.
Yeah, okay. And best of luck finding out how your girlfriend got pregnant, Peter. Gra wants to know, is 8 degrees the optimum temperature? I've been storing my wine at 7 degrees. Is that okay? Have I ruined it? I'm panicking.
Oh, you may throw it all out now. So.
Yeah, you've ruined it. Sorry, your life is over.
Ruined, yes.
Yeah. John says, she's joking. There, you're fine. Is the thinner the glass at the rim, the better the wine glass? I cut my lip on a glass once. The rim was so thin. Not an enjoyable experience, I can tell you, says John.
It's the aerodynamics of the glass, and it's very, very fine crystal. I've never actually managed to cut my lip on a glass, but, you know, that's a good trick.
Yeah. And is a lot of this, though, you know, like, fellas, you go and buy really expensive cameras and never take any pictures with it, or people who have really fancy stereos and one record.
It does actually work. And I have a set of six Riedel Cabernet Glass that I've managed to keep for 20 years. And it's one of those things, like some dinner party, they'll go for the hop.
Yeah.
But if I'm serving Bordeaux, Bordeaux-style wines, I use those and they really show the wines very well.
Well, no, they do. But in the sense that people often get obsessed with the kind of equipment around wine.
That's rather than I have. By the way, and I got them as a present.
So Lobster Random says, the only thing I look for in a wine glass is more wine.
Well, yes, that's a good one.
Mike says, movie makers are a bit like gardeners who design the most beautiful gardens for the Chelsea Flower Show, but their own gardens are awash with pissy beds and nettles. I sometimes wonder, can movie directors not step back and see the weeds and do a little cutting? Stripping back the CGI would be a start. Says Mike. Olivia says, Esther rocks. I went to see Ad Astra thanks to her and loved it.
She didn't, because I haven't seen it.
What? Okay, well, I don't know who.
That was Serena. That was Serena,
yeah.
I'd say, was it?
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Sorry, you don't rock. Serena
I don't
rocks,
rock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I have a bottle of 1976 Palmer's Chateau Medoc. Is it of any value? Jimmy wants to know.
Palmer, 76 wasn't a great vintage. And in fact, I've tried a 76. It was still quite green. This is about 10 years ago. Chateau Palmer is a very, very good. It's an Omadoc wine. I can't remember what class it is. It might be second growth. I can't remember. But yes, it is. But again, there's very little resale value on single bottles of wine. I just say drink it.
Yeah. There's already a sequel to the film Joker. It's called Batman. In fact, several of them. One would have thought. Right, let's move on to our first wine, Jane.
All right, I want to talk about organic wine. Very much at the moment, we get lots of questions here on the show. People looking for vegan wine, organic wine. Mm. And so I just thought, I was actually at a conference in Spain at the beginning of September. And very interesting. I mean, 90% of organic grapes globally come from European wine regions, which surprised me. And Italy leads the way. It's 15.9% of all wines. And Spain is in second place with about 11.6%. Now, the thing is, Spain's climate is such, you know, I mean, apart from sort of green Spain up in the north, really it's very desert-like or Mediterranean down in the south. So they've got an ideal climate for growing organic grapes, in that they don't need to, say, use pesticides or spray copper sulfate, because they've got a perfect climate. Now, one of the people who I often mention on this show, who is probably one of the best known producers of organic wine in Ireland, is Mary Paul. And her website is Mary Paul Wines. And this is one that Mary brings in. And this is a Fino style wine that I tasted when I was in Pamplona at the conference. And it's Bodega Robles Piedra Lugena. And the DO is Montella Moriles. It's a 50cl bottle and it's €13, and it's available on Mary's website. But the guy who produces this, Francisco Robles Rubio, I met him in Pamplona, and I just loved his wine. The region is in Andalusia, and it's in the centre. It's between, it's Granada's to one side and Seville is the other side. And the grape that this region is best known for is called Pedro Jimenez, or as they like to call it, PX. Now, in the Jerez region, they like to make PX. They sun dry the grapes and then they make this dark, until the grapes are almost black, and then they make this really unctuous liquid gold that they actually pour over ice cream in Jerez. But PX is made as a fresh Fino style in this region, Montilla Moriles in Andalusia. The grapes are grown on this chalk soil, Albariza, which retains water during the dry, hot summer months. So, you know, they've got a lot going for them in that they can produce these organic grapes because it's warm. The soil means that the water table gives the grapes the necessary water that they need to grow. Pedro Jimenez is the most widely planted grape in the region. The DO was originally created in 1932, so it's you know, this style has been going for a long time. And the difference is that they make they use this fractional blending system, the Solera system, to make the wine. So basically, this is an oxidative wine style. And I've been sitting here now for the last few half an hour. I can smell it. I mean, it's the smell of it's all over the studio at this stage. The wine is aged in wood, which basically involves topping up the barrel with younger wine in order to keep the nutrients fresh and the yeast alive. The floor is a living yeast which continues to feed on the crushed grapes. When I tried this, I just thought this was absolutely gorgeous. There's a lovely sort of acidity and saltiness to it. So, I mean, if you're in the part of Spain where tapas culture literally is everywhere, and you have these lovely toasted almonds and salted toasted almonds, or, you know, marinated shark, you know, or all sorts of Iberian ham, all the local natural cheeses, it's just made to go with, you know, a big plate of something. Mm-hmm. And as an aperitif wine, I just think this is gorgeous. It's very oxidative on the nose, but when you taste it, it's beautifully fresh. It's got that slightly oxidative style. Some people either love it or hate it. I love it. But you get the sort of salty, almost saline twang coming through on that. I chill that down.
Yeah. What's the alcohol level in that?
15% ABV. Yeah. So definitely an aperitif wine.
Yeah.
Just lovely. And I mean, Sherry, look, it's one of the best wine trips I ever went on in my life, bar none, was a trip to Jerez in 1998, and I have to say, I've never been on a trip I enjoyed so much. And the wines are just amazing.
Come on, admit it. It's the only trip you remember.
They're
not called wine trips for nothing.
There's a lot we don't remember about that one, because we were drinking a lot of sherry. But it was such fun, and I just remember standing in a sherry bodega at about 12 o'clock in the day, eating marinated shark and drinking chilled Fino sherry, and thinking that I had arrived and that life was good,
indeed.
So anyway, that's our first organic Spanish wine, and we'll have another one now in a few minutes.
And how much is that?
50 cl is €13.
€13. There you go. Right, what movie you'd like to talk about first, Esther?
Let's do Gemini Man, I think.
Okay.
Who are you? I don't want to shoot you.
Fine. Don't shoot me. Mind if I shoot you?
Did they show you a picture of me?
Yeah, you look old.
Kid, you take one step closer, you're gonna leave me no choice.
There you go, there was a bit of shooting there at the end. That was Will Smith acting against Will Smith there in Gemini Man.
Kind of a novel idea if they had managed to pull it off, of using like this digital technology to de-age Will Smith and have him play two different versions of the same person, kind of the same person at different stages in their lives. I thought that's a good idea for a sci-fi movie, you know, and throwing a bit some good action sequences into the mix.
Yeah,
and I was intrigued by the idea of Ang Lee making it, because the great filmmaker who made Asian movies such as Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, before coming to the States and making, you know, shown his versatility, I suppose, with films like Sense and Sensibility, the Jane Austen adaptation, winning a heap of Oscars for the brilliant Brokeback Mountain. But then in recent years, he's kind of gone into a new kind of train in his career, in that he's just become really interested in film technology and how much they can push the boat out. So he's kind of doing a James Cameron really in his career at the moment. It started with The Life of Pi, which actually was one of the better looking 3D films we've gotten the last decade, to be fair, and really brought that world to life. And here he's doing it again, but it's just really bad, both in terms of visual effects and in terms of story. So the story, first of all, is it's just very humorless and generic, really, as well. It's Will Smith. He's playing this ace assassin. He's 51. He's become haunted by the ghosts of many of the 70 or so people he killed, even though lots of them were baddies. He's having nightmares, stuff like that.
Is this all set in the future or
it's
near
set
future?
Sci-fi land, I'd call
it.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Probably near future. And, you know, he's got a plan to get out of the game. But unknown to him, his agency boss, Clay Veris, who's played by Clive Owen, has this sinister plan for no apparent reason. This is never properly qualified or explained, but to take out Brogan, to have him assassinated by a younger version of himself who has been... you can imagine the pitch meeting for this one, can't you?
Yeah, it's great.
He's been secretly cloned without the older Will Smith's knowledge. Neither man know the other exists.
Why do they need to assassinate the older one?
Exactly.
Why can't they just let the older one retire?
The only reason
move to Bundoran.
The only reason I can give you for that is there'd be no film.
Right. Okay.
So you know, so it's a nice, neat idea that he's cloned, and but it's on very shaky ground because the whole concept then is that they can preempt each other's moves in the action sequences, as if life has nothing to do with that, as if that is completely to do with DNA, So that's a pretty shaky idea. There are a couple of great set pieces. There is a kind of a chase, motorcycle chase results in an assassination attempt. And it's kind of fun at first to watch Will Smith do battle with himself. But ultimately, this is a really bland and generic story. There's no joy to it. It doesn't propel itself. And I think what's happened here is the focus has been maybe as much, if not more, on the technology of the film as it was on the story.
Yes.
And it's impossible to say, I suppose. I just think it's a bad film, full stop, I would put forward. But I think it's very hard to say to what extent the digital technology impedes the film.
Makes it even worse.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So,
Do the technical parts of it work? Does the young Will Smith look like a digital version, or does it look like... Would you know if you weren't told?
There's an artificiality to the whole thing, to every bit of it, including... would I have known if I didn't know? I'm not sure. It's interesting. You see, it's at a kind of a... you can go cutting edge technology, but that also means stuff we haven't quite got right yet. And it's an interesting exercise in failure, I suppose.
In The Irishman, from what I've seen, those kind of digitized, and it doesn't look that convincing.
Yeah,
I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see where they go with it all. But the main problem for me though was not the de-aging here; it was the absolute horrible look of the film. And just on the frame rate of that, like back 80 years ago when people were going to cinema and watching silent movies and stuff like that, it was decided really by the movie community that it should be about 24 frames a second. That was mostly, and that's why you get that lovely flickering the original celluloid, which we all think was very romantic, but might have actually annoyed the film goers of the time. I'm not sure. But, that whole cinema paradiso kind of look.
Yeah.
And that was because film was expensive. So they didn't want the frame rate. They didn't want to make it higher because they'd need to run more film through the projector, But then with the era of digitization, it's been coming gradually. Like the standard now would be about 30 in film. Or on the big screen at least, and then it's kind of gone up without you even knowing it really. Even on your TV, what you watch,
your 4K TV is massively high.
Exactly. But what this is another league altogether. So you're saying the average film is about 30 or so, but this is 120 frames per second. And
Why is he doing it this? Does that help with the other digital effects? Is it the overall look of the film, he thinks?
It definitely helps with the 3D.
Yeah.
Like it transforms the 3D.
Right, yeah.
I think if they get it right and if it ends up becoming the norm, I think it could work very well in action movies. And this is an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else that isn't action looks like so fake.
Right, it's all hyper-real.
Hyper-real fakiness. And there's no, you don't get any perspective. Everything's sharp. Everything's vivid. So you don't have any...
Depth of field at all.
It's just really horrible looking, and quite disorientating as well. I watched it in 3D and I had to take the glasses off a few times during some of the more intense action scenes. I can only assume that... with the challenges of streaming and the rate at which technology is changing and how we watch things and where we watch things is changing, that the movies have always tried to come up with the things, but I would call this the Guinness Light, really, of of technology and film.
That is the cruelest thing you've ever said about a movie.
I don't ever want to see anything like this again. It's horrible. And I mean, Will Smith's not a bad... not a bad actor in terms of, you know, we won't see him do Shakespeare, you know, but he's always been a good leading man. He's always had a credibility and a likability
to him.
Yeah. But here he just, like, it just sucks any sort of performance element out of the actors as well. And Mary Elizabeth Winstead doesn't do much better, who's a kind of a special agent who's pulled into this whole thing and ends up kind of on the run with him. It's just, I don't know what it is, but if this is the future of cinema, I'm just going to...
I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. I mean, I had the absolute privilege last week of the IFI asked me to put on a movie as part of the monthly bigger picture series. And, you know, after indulging myself for about 3 days of what'll I pick, I found out they hadn't shown Fargo in a long, long time.
Crikey.
And they managed to find it on 35mm film. And it was a real absolute treat. It was just such a pleasant night. And the film was flickery. It was a bit scratchy.
Rather than 70, you mean?
Yeah. But it was proper film, like, you know what I mean? And it was a little bit scratchy here and there because it's 20-something years old. Yeah. And you could see some of the younger people in the audience looking at each other going, is there something wrong with the film? But it wasn't. It was just beautiful flickering film, you know. And this just feels like you're watching a really, really high-definition television show or something on a huge, ginormous screen. I mean, if this is what they...
That is what it is.
If this is what they think will bring people back to the cinema, I don't see any difference to a home viewing experience with this, really.
Yeah, okay. Similar ideas being texted in about wine in cans. Ray says, yuck. And more to the point, given the current ongoing climate change awareness despairing, glass is so much more easy to recycle than aluminium. To go the way of the milk bottle because of corporate opportunism and greed is so feckin' annoying. What wine do you recommend to help to get over this horrific future? Says Ray, well, one in a bottle, obviously.
Yes, our natural wine in a bottle will help you, will ease you into it.
Somebody texted in to say they loved it. Did that text and I see the same movie? Ad Astra was terrible. Brad Pitt with his monologues. Ugh, give it a rest. Not sure what he was trying to achieve, but Lordy, it was utter awful. Dexter. James says, Joker not being a story movie is one thing I cannot agree with at all. It gives a great origin story to the best comic book villain ever, says James.
Okay.
No answer to that. Colin wants to know, marinated shark, is it rubbery?
No, it was lovely.
Yeah.
It was very, you know, it was...
Be like, chewy.
No, it wasn't chewy. It was like, it was, you know, similar to cod, you know, it was nice.
Okay.
It was lovely, yeah.
All right. Flaky, yeah. I have a 1982 Dom Perignon in a sealed original gift box. Is it worth anything? Single bottle.
Single bottle. Again, it's unless you go to somewhere like one of the auction houses, they do have fine wine sales that go on from time to time. But 82 was a lovely vintage. And it's the thing about champagne, though, is once that the wine has been bottled, it's never going to improve. It's not going to improve with age, you know. That's the one fine wine that that a period of age does not benefit. So it could be a bit tired and it could be a bit oxidized at this stage.
Pretentious text of the day goes to this person who sent in, is there a huge difference between Chateau Trop Chaud and Trateau Petrus apart from the €2,350 price difference?
Petrus is, I mean, the Merlot based, it's one of the most famous wines of the right bank, Saint-Emilion. Everybody, when they start learning about wine, I once went to a wine dinner where I paid about £100 to have a tiny glass of Petrus. Well, we had dinner as well. Yeah. It was so worth it. It's about nearly 30 years ago when I was just a rookie in the wine trade.
Expensive.
And I wanted to try Petrus and I wanted to try this fine one. A friend of mine, Mary, and I went, we had a great night. We got tiny little glass, but we drank loads of other wine as well.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
I'm sure. Our hashtag, by the way, is Cougar Movies. It's a top trend in Ireland. 50 Shades of Grey Hair and Brittle Woman. Somebody's angry texting in to say it's pronounced Petrus.
Oh.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Petrus. Looking for a rosé that isn't Whispering Angel. I'm not raining money. Cheap and cheerful, please.
Yeah, actually, do you know what? There are some fantastic rosés in many, many of the supermarkets, the Provençal rosés, that you'll get for about €8.99. And I know Aldi has them, Lidl has them, Tesco, Dunnes, Super Value. They're all over the place. And some of them are really, really good. It's the suck it and see principle. Go out and have a try and see. And you'll find, you know, it's that, it's the colour and they're nice. And certainly I've tried a few of them and I've had no problems with them.
Yeah. Brendan Mead says Ad Astra with pure dung. Dong. Pure dung. I don't really mean exactly what dong means. Gary says, speaking of glasses, I was in a very well-known Dublin eatery recently and to my horror, they wanted to serve me my wine in a non-stemmed glass. What is this crazy hipster fascination with serving wine in gaudy tumblers?
Yeah, well, actually, the tasting glasses can be just tumblers and yeah. I've done wine tastings using just tumblers and they're especially, they're posh tumblers. They're made specifically for wine tasting and if it was a posh restaurant, then it was a posh tumbler. So I wouldn't turn my nose up at it. It's fine. The wines will taste fine.
Yeah, if but the stem though is for, so your hand doesn't heat up the wine. That kind
yeah, of, but nowadays, that how long does it last? Does the wine last your glass anyway? Not
yeah,
long.
Okay. Good point, yeah. Could you ask Jane where we could get Finca La Florencia Malbec in Ireland? Recently had it in the UK and loved it.
It's not one, and I know most of the Argentinian wines that come into Ireland, and it's not one that's probably not here.
Yeah, if it's in the UK, we'll never get it now. Not after Brexit. Has Jean tried every wine ever made? Ask her there for me.
No, but I'm still trying.
Yeah. Sheila says, when I was a young one, lived in Belfast, we went to the cinema. We used to say we were going to the flicks. I wonder, does that expression come from the flickering in the early films?
Well, I'm
probably
sure it does.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's a very good point. And someone else says, your movie reviewer just mentioned 35mm reels. Reminded me that I came across a guy that has a few hundred of them from an old cinema that closed down at least 20 years ago. Would there be any interest in them? I have one reel in the house here.
Oh, wow.
How interesting.
I would definitely...
Would there be many cinemas left that can actually play 35mm?
Cinemas are now digitised.
Yeah.
I would say, though, the good people at the Irish Film Institute have a film preservation arm and would probably be very interested
right.
to hear
okay,
about
yeah.
that. Yeah. And I would definitely get in touch.
And that screening that you had of Fargo, they have a projector, is it? Or do they have to kind of go and get one out of mothballs?
No, they have projectors in screens 1 and 2 for sure. They're showing Joker on 70mm in there
right.
at the moment, actually.
Okay.
And I think are the only cinema in the country to have that. And it's definitely, I think when Dunkirk came out a couple of years ago, Peter Jackson's film, great film, the IFI showed it on 70mm and it was a huge success for them. So even though I think it's more expensive, it becomes a destination movie for things like that. And there's certainly an audience out there who want to see
how interesting.
Some of these movies on film, you know.
If you could have kind of... movies once a month, say, and it's kind of movies that are still on film.
I'm hoping for a vinyl situation,
kind of like a vinyl type,
where the hipsters bring it back for us, you know.
Yeah, okay, that'd be very interesting. Right, let's move on to our second wine of the day.
Our second wine is the 2017 Le Naturel. It's $18.99. You'll get it in Eli Wine Store in Maynooth, Green Man Wines in Terenure, and Bradley's in North Main Street in Cork, which is a lovely shop. Michael Cregan runs it, and it's a shop I love very much. Now, this wine comes from Navarra, and Navarra. I visited, one of the fun things we did on this trip was we went to this Roman villa, which is dates back to 1 AD, and we literally tasted wine in the original cellar, you know, which were surrounded by these things they call dolia, which are large earthenware jars that they used to age the wine in Roman times. And it really added to the atmosphere of the place. So it was about 60 jars with a storage capacity about 800 litres. So that was a big winery. And they also had a larium, which is a small stone altar used for religious ceremonies.
Crikey.
So, I mean, like you're basically in, it's all covered over. It's a visitor's attraction in Navarra. But it's called the Villa of the Muses. And if you get the chance, anybody going over to do the Camino, it's definitely worth a look. Anyway, The seminar and tasting, we tasted all these organic wines, and this one, Aurora Bodega, is a pioneering winery from Navarra. They use organic and biodynamic methods to cultivate their wines. Basically, organic farming is about growing vines without the use of synthetic chemicals. Soil improvement and crop fertilization is achieved by using decaying organic matter such as manure. Insects are controlled using natural enemies. In other words, the big guy eats the little guy. And weeds are kept down by mulch and cultivation. Now, the thing that makes this wine even more natural, it's vegan, right? It's natural, so no SO2, no sulfur used in it. The grapes are grown in a place called the Yeri Valley, which is one of the highest areas in Navarra. This is just like, it ticks all the boxes. It's a boutique winery using organic and biodynamic farm, high vineyards and no added sulfur. So for anybody who is vegan, who wants to save the planet, this is the future of wine.
Goes down very well with a nice piece of steak as well.
It does. And in my tasting note, I wrote, I love it, and I do.
Not if you're vegan, obviously.
Right. Anyway, it's very fresh.
Yeah. No, it's lovely. It's really nice.
And then the way it's very fresh, very fruity, beautiful wine, Le Naturel.
Yeah. Right. We'll move on to a bump along the way. Here's a clip.
You all right, Mummy?
I don't know. Allegra, I have to talk to you. I don't know how. Well, I do know how, but, I'm 10 weeks pregnant.
Mummy, what?
It just happened. I didn't think I could...
Oh, hi.
I don't know, it just...
Mummy.
It might not be such a bad thing, you know.
Who's the dad?
That's not important.
Not important?
Look, I don't know him, darling. Allegra, please.
Mummy, just stop.
There you go. Is this the snapper just set in the north for middle-aged people?
Yeah, it kind of is, actually. Bronagh Gallagher is great here. She's always good. She always shows up, but she's so good here. She puts flesh and bones on what could have just been a comedy about a middle-aged woman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's playing Pamela, a 44-year-old who is... she's kind of... It's really touching this because she's every reason to think her life has passed her by, really. She's a single parent, disappointed by life and by men. And she has this daughter who's played by a really, really good newcomer by the name of Lola Pettycrew, who won the Ringham Bay Newcomer Award up at the Galway Film Fella for her performance here. And, there's an element of when she gets over the shock of finding out that she's pregnant with this young buck from a one-night stand in the back of a car, like she's doing everything wrong for a woman in her 40s, this woman. There's a little bit of her thinks, oh gosh, maybe there's going to be some purpose to my life again. Mm. And that's where this becomes something really, really special and powerful. And it's kind of mortifying though for her, for Ali, her daughter, who's already having problems with her peers at school. She doesn't know how she should feel about her new sibling and who's on the way. And it's kind of it's a case of, you know, these women are both under pressure in their lives in different ways. And is this going to massive change going to bring them together or pull them apart? So there's a lot of really good drama here in all the lighter moments, and I think it just builds into something really powerful. It's a story, I suppose, about motherhood and all its facets and imperfections and complications, and it's a real credit to everyone involved in this, I have to say. A first time director by the name of Shelley Love, who could be the first filmmaker in the island of Ireland to have gotten funding for her childcare, because she was very close. She had a child in her 40s herself by a mad coincidence.
Yeah.
This project came to her. She didn't write the script, but it's quite like her own circumstances. And she she kind of felt, you know, in pre-production that she wasn't going to be able to make the film, that it was going to be too much of a time commitment, and she has a young son. And Northern Ireland Screen, and coupled with a benevolent fund in the UK, who are geared towards getting people from different walks of life and different backgrounds into making cinema, and not just people who can afford to make it and finance it. They stepped up and they helped fund her childcare so she could get this made.
That's brilliant.
Which is fantastic.
And very it's just appropriate given what this film
totally
is about.
Right for the movie, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Indeed. Esther and Jean, thank you both very much. That's it for today.